The following programming is sponsored by Thomas Tool III. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Good afternoon, Greater Philadelphia area. This is Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Michelle Ellis. No Sarah Timon this week. Michelle is with Title Alliance. She's the operations manager there. We've been working with them for years. Very excited to have you on. And we've got a whole bunch of stuff to cover today. We're going to be talking about a Santa Claus rally with mortgage rates. The Zillow's annual housing forecast just came out, as well as the NAR settlement approval and the Compass Christie's merger. Jam-packed show, and also talk about Title Alliance and all the great things Michelle and her company do. So if you get some value out of this, you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications, and if you want to schedule a call with our team about how to navigate these home predictions that Zillow's coming out with, you can do that with the link in the comments. So Michelle, thanks for coming on, first and foremost. Why don't you like introduce yourself, tell everyone a little bit about you before we get into everything here.
Sure, thanks for having me. So I'm a senior operations manager with Title Alliance. We are a joint venture title company. So we have partners all over the East and West Coast. I oversee the East Coast, so we're all over Pennsylvania. Some of us are actually neighbors with each other. We're so close together. And we're down in Florida, New Jersey, and Virginia, and Indiana. That's my territory. And we have a lot of great agents and real estate partners.
Well, we've been working with at our firm. I mean, it's got to be 20, 30 years now. We've been working with Title Alliance.
Yep.
And little known fact, what Michelle was talking about, she lived across the street from me late in my life before I moved out of my parents' house. But that was, it's funny how things work out sometimes. So grateful to have you on. Excited to get your insight here. We're going to talk all about Title Alliance, what you do there, the value of enhanced title insurance when we get to the last segment here. What I wanted to talk about first, we normally do is talk about what's going on in the market. And we saw rates have come down a little bit. I was seeing like quotes about 6 5/8. Mm-hmm. When rates come down, do you guys typically see like a spike in applications, or how do you track that at your company? I'm very curious about this.
Typically, it's refis when we see the rates come down, but so far we've seen very little refis. So right now, people are living waiting for a bigger drop. So we know it takes some time to actually hit that mortgage rate when we start to see drops at the Fed. So What we're anticipating is more of a maybe with the January drop that we're hearing about. And at that point, we're hoping to see more refis. Once we start getting them, it's typically a big boom, and it will take over like 50% of our business at some points, depending on where that market is. We have those people who don't want to move because they love their rates. And then we have those people who are waiting for a significant drop that's worth going through the refi. Because some people bought kind of recently, so they want to make sure it's really worth it and not just do the little drop. They're waiting for that bigger percentage that they can really get.
Is there like a, I mean, you've got a, you haven't just done title work. You've worked at real estate companies.
Correct.
And some other places. And I think you hit a great point here about what the Fed's going to do. Right now, our friends at CME Group, they do like a betting odds, right, on what's going to happen at the next meeting.
Yeah.
And right now, there's a 73.8% chance we're going to see another 25 basis point decrease at the meeting that's happening in December here. That's on December 18th. So, you know, if that happens, we could see rates trend a little bit lower. A lot of the predictions are we're going to see like 5.5 and 6.5 in that range next year. When you see with this refi business, I mean, obviously that's been a little dry this year, right?
Very dry, absolutely.
So, what are you guys doing? I mean, you have partners like us, but like, what do you do to try to bring in business in this kind of climate? Because the refinance market has been non-existent, not non-existent, but it's been very few and far between.
Absolutely, we've had very few, and we actually had a long-term partner that's always been refi based that we've actually closed after one of our originals, and it was a very tough decision. And with the trends of the markets, it just made the most sense for them and us at that point in time. Mm-hmm. And it was really disappointing. We held on to it as long as we could. But we just knew that for the foreseeable future, a refi business was no longer going to substantiate themselves. And without that, any other business being in just sales and just refi, it wouldn't work. In our markets, we typically work with real estate groups. So we have realtors like you who are going out and have sales or listings on a regular basis. So that's really what drives our business. Because we're affiliated with these different real estate offices, we're lucky enough to have that business coming in along with our title people. A lot of our employees have known so many people in the business for the years they've been in. They're able to help drive that business as well. And then when we have that opportunity, we partner with the mortgage affiliates, mostly within the real estate offices we have, to get those refis. And so a lot of times they're one of our partners as well.
Love it. Well, I think that's what I'm hearing here, and a lot of people don't realize this. They look at title insurance as like a necessary thing.
Mm-hmm.
You're running a business there, and it's like, what are the indicators that we're going to need to drive our business? Which, if you're a real estate agent listening, pay attention, because these lead indicators matter in all businesses, whether it's title or something else. So when you see the market behave like it has been, and you know we're looking at, you know, Zillow just came out with their 2025 housing market predictions, where you know they're predicting kind of flat price growth throughout 2025. I don't necessarily agree with that, especially in our marketplace here. I'd imagine we see somewhere between like a 4% to 5% jump in pricing. They're predicting a 2.6% home value growth in 2025, which nationally is probably right. We're coming off the lowest level of transactions since like 1995, yep. Right? I wasn't in the business then. I don't think you were either.
Nope.
And I know I'm older than you, so it's probably a no. I mean, I'm still in high school. Not even. I think I was, I was just in high school. And so we see these things happen. What do you do internally from like a title perspective? Do you look for more partners? Do you look to partner with different people? How do you run a business in what's been a pretty tough 24 months, and you're limited by the number of transactions? And I think, you know, mortgage companies are kind of in the same boat. I mean,
absolutely. The first year it was slower. It was really difficult. We had to do some unfortunate layoffs. They were really tough. We had to really look at our processes, our expenses. We have cut our expenses significantly. We have run thinner than we ever have. And for that, it's the benefit not only for our employees, it's also the benefit of our joint venture investors. Mm-hmm. So we want to be as lean as possible so that the, you know, the dividends are there, but we also want to protect our investments and make sure that the service level is still there. So it's always really a balance. So we really look at when we need a next hire, and we'll make it to the point where our teams are like, yeah, now. But our teams are super aware, because nobody likes to see anybody have to leave.
Yeah.
And so we've stayed fairly balanced over the last year since those layoffs. We've had the opportunity to, in some areas, like you said, around here, we're busy. And so we're still seeing some increases. And we've had some offices have a year better than last. And so not only have they had higher profits because of the price of the housing, we've actually had, in some offices, more sales.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, more profits, not more sales.
Well, and I think it's interesting you bring that up, because when you look at like these numbers, the market, it paints a pretty bleak picture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that the average real estate agent, they transact like a couple homes a year. So
right.
It's about who you work with in a lot of cases. I know we're up about our teams, I would say 14.5-15% year over year in terms of transactions, which I'm happy to see any positive movement,
sure.
Right? You mentioned something else there that I think everyone who runs a business, forget what business it is, needs to pay attention to. You've got to watch your costs and be very careful there, because it's easy when things are going well to like, oh yeah, we'll add this person. Mm-hmm. Let's invest in that. That's not always the right way to do it. Was that kind of a wake-up call? Because I know a lot of real estate teams, a lot of real estate agents, they had to cut a lot because they were spending so much during the pandemic and didn't really pay attention.
Absolutely. It was a wake-up call for us as a company. And I came in, I was with I was on the real estate side
I remember when this happened, yes.
Pandemic, and I came into the title side right after the pandemic was actually lifting. So I kind of came in where that transition was happening, and from where our title teams went from, they couldn't get enough people mm-hmm. to work, and the deals were nonstop, to now that they had like offered people anything and everything to get them in, to deals were drying up. So they had to revamp their opportunities and figure out how we were going to streamline things in the companies. And with our partners and our agents, we spend a lot of time with them and see what they were dropping transaction coordinators, they were dropping assistants, they were looking at, hey, do you guys need anybody? Because I would love to do some part time. And we're like, we have our own people we're trying to save.
Yeah.
You know, it's a difficult time, and you realize where you're actually spending that money.
Well, but this is why a lot of real estate agents have challenges, because they don't pay attention to running a business. They
right.
just think, I'm here to sell houses, and that's true, but you've got costs, mm-hmm. right? You've got, you know, people, if you're employing folks like we do. That's a really smart piece of advice for anyone listening. So You know, when you look at that and we kind of look at these predictions, does that affect your projections for 2025? So what I mean by that is, like, we're seeing home value growth. They're predicting 2.6% in 2025. I'm clear that's low for our market. Mm-hmm. When you look at the number of sales and other things they're predicting, Skylar Olson, who is the chief economist over at Zillow, I'm going to actually be interviewing her tomorrow on Knowledge Brokers, which is pretty exciting. They're projecting 4.3 million home sales, which would be up, you know, you're seeing predictions anywhere from 4.2. NAR is at 4.9 million. I think that's way too high. The average is 4.34. If we're coming off like a 4 million plus or minus number of homes that sell, you're looking at like a 9% increase. Does that affect your projections for titles when you see these kind of predictions come out? How do you look at this data from a business standpoint? Because I think, you know, consumers need to be paying attention, but no one ever talks about the title side or the mortgage side and projecting these things.
We typically look at this. I mean, we'll look at this. We'll look at local areas so we can dive in a little bit deeper. We'll look at NAR and we'll look at certain areas, parts of NAR, where our offices are and dive in deeper there. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, we also turn to our partners and say, what are you guys projecting? What's your goals? Where mm-hmm. do you intend to be? Are you in growth mode? Like, you guys opened a couple offices this year. We know that you're in growth mode. So when we're building a budget for you, it may be different than the office down the street. Smart. That may be in more of a, we're hoping to stay steady next year goal. It depends where each office is at and where their locations are. So, and just in Pennsylvania, we go all the way up through the Poconos into like Scranton.
It's a little different
and,
up there.
Yeah. And then we go out to Lancaster. So they're very different areas. So we really did like hone in into those specific areas and have those right conversations. So it's great to see it across the country, but you really need to know where you are. Just like you need an agent for the area you're looking mm-hmm. at, because the agent from outside that area, are you really going up to Scranton? I mean, no. You can do your best, but there's all kinds of strange things that aren't here.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? There's agents that'll do that. And that's for the sure. sign of like a bad agent, because they're just chasing business instead of focusing on helping people. And even, you know, you're talking about like Lancaster and the Poconos. What about the city of Philadelphia compared to the suburbs right now? It's completely dramatically different in terms of absorption and time on market. And if you don't hire an agent and you're a consumer that understands all this and they can't come in and actually communicate that data, like, that makes me nervous for the consumer. So I love that you run the projections that way. I think that's a really smart thing to do. So you also, and we didn't do a lot of prep here, so I'm throwing a lot of stuff at you, which is great. I mean, we did the normal amount of prep. Sarah and I don't do a lot of prep either. So, you know, there's people right now, they see all these projections. So it's like rates came down, prices are going to go up, more homes are going to sell, and they're thinking about moving. But a lot of folks say, I'm going to wait until after the holidays. So you just moved.
I did.
On the consumer side. So I'm clear that anyone thinking about moving right now, they should be looking at five things that they should focus on preparing for. What did you do prior to, you've got real estate experience, you got title experience. What did you do prior to the move? What were some of the things you prepped?
We prepped our outside.
Okay. So you prepped the house.
We wanted to make sure the house looked really good. We did our homework. We met with our mortgage person. We found out what we were giving up.
Yeah.
Where were we willing to go? So our goal was to downsize. And, you know, there's a mix of, it seems like, where people are going now. In some of the articles you read, people are looking to downsize again after increasing the size of their home during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So we were the downsized people, so we were willing to get up that rate because we were actually going down. So it was a win for us.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we were going to expand, we would still be investigating what that looked like in terms of finances for us, in terms of where the market is now. And honestly, some of it was too just like researching the area we were going to. For me, we left the area we knew. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the area I grew up in either, so I was doing a lot of homework on what I was getting into and where that was taking us, because commute-wise, it was a dream, but...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, your office, I know the corporate office is like right there.
I can
walk. I mean, that's incredible. And that's a life-changing thing, right?
It
that's something that when you talk about what you're giving up, I'm assuming you're talking about we were giving up a lower rate,
yes.
Right? And we know where rates are now. They were coming in like 6.5-7% throughout the fall, even as low as 6. And I'm not asking you what your rate is, but I'm imagining you probably have them from like a 3 or like a high 2.
Oh, yeah, we were definitely down in the 3s.
So there's a big change there. And you made a move because of a life event, right? You mm-hmm. wanted less space. You told me before you were sick of the maintenance, which is great.
Yeah.
I'm hearing you prepped your home. And you also prepped your financials. And you learned what you wanted, which are three of the five things that I wrote down here. How long did it take you to prep the home? Like, what was that like?
So we kind of did a crash course. So okay. I met with a realtor. I did not sell my own home. I do not have my license anymore. I met with a friend. I decided to go completely outside all of our relationships because how do you pick one when I'm in a relationship with the number of people we have? And we built a plan on when to put it on the market. So we chose the weekend after Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. Smart.
So that was about 2 weeks before Labor Day. So we brought in this guy that we use a lot for projects. We had an older house. We had a lot of projects on a regular mm-hmm. basis and said, can you do these like five last things? A lot of it was paint, just quick updates, nothing. Our main projects were done at that point. So he touched up everything he could. Did the five things in 2 weeks, and then we were outside doing yard work pretty much for like a week. At any fair, you know, summer has really long hours of sunlight, which I usually enjoy except for those weeks. And we were ready to go, and they were in the house taking pictures well before even Labor Day was there. So the coming soons were out. Like, they had a whole marketing plan that they shared with us and followed. So it was... It was on. Well,
it sounds like you did a lot. Like, you had 2 weeks, but it sounds like you did a lot of work before those 2 weeks is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we considered prepping it, we started downsize, like cleaning out.
Decluttering
was number one. When they actually came and looked around, they suggested even more decluttering. And I knew to take some personal items down mm-hmm. to make it less personalized so people could envision themselves there. And I left it as like clean and just staged as possible without looking like, but still looking like somebody lived there.
Smart.
But I just took that lead.
So, and you kind of, you had different experience than the average consumer. Most consumers don't know anything. So it sounds like you did a lot of prep work getting the home ready. So for what, and the reason I'm going into this is there's a lot of people this time of year, they're talking about like their New Year's goals. Like we maybe want to move next year. The smartest and most savvy consumers now, what they're doing is they're getting ahead of this stuff. Like, they're having these meetings. They're strategizing about the time. I love that you time the market, right? I think mm-hmm. that's really smart because I don't know there's a bad time to list your home, but there's some times you want to avoid. Like, don't put your home on the market the day after Christmas, right?
Or the night before.
Or like Thanksgiving weekend might be a little slower unless it's already vacant. Like, mm-hmm. there's always the exceptions. But if you can time it, I think it's really smart to wait until like right after Labor Day, and then you had a plan in place. So the home prep can be kind of overwhelming. Sounds like you got a lot of great guidance there is what I'm
Absolutely.
Hearing.
Absolutely. And then we agreed to let him have the house for the weekend.
Smart.
So it was like all open houses mm-hmm. every day. So we just stayed away for the weekend.
Well, that makes your life easier. I've been through that. And, you know, you want to have the home available, but you also got to live there.
Yeah.
So that's very good advice. So you had some good advice there. You also talked about the financing part, mm-hmm. right? And again, you've got a different perspective being in real estate, but I don't think people realize, like, sometimes there's something funny on their credit report. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to have all, like, if you're a 1099 independent contract, you might need to have your tax returns filed before you apply for a loan next year.
True.
What kind of prep work did you do from the finance side? Without getting into details, obviously.
I mean, we've worked with our mortgage guy before, so he knew us, and he knew a little bit of our finances. But he asked for a bunch of stuff up front, and we had a lot of questions like, is there any opportunities? Like, you know, everybody does the standard 30-year mortgage. Is there mm-hmm. something that we could do that's less time and we just need to refi before 10 years? Or is there a new product out that we don't know about? Like, I spend a lot of time in agent office meetings mm-hmm. where a lot of times mortgage vendors speak and you hear about these different programs they have set up for different situations. So I wanted to know what all those different options were. Like, I had him sending us everything and the different options that were as long as we refinanced before X happened or whatever mm-hmm. that looked like, and what our willingness or risk that was for us. Because the risk is also it could go higher. Mm-hmm. So that was a risk we had to decide personally if we would take or not, you know, by doing some of those things. But I mean, just making sure that you've asked every question and opportunity, because if you're short on cash now, but you know that you're going to have more come the future, there could be a program better for you than that 30-year that we all just, I feel like we default to mm-hmm. as a consumer.
That's great advice. And, you know, what I'm loving is how much prep work you did, because, you know, a lot of people, they just like see a house they like and they want to go look at it and buy it. And that's the biggest mistake you can make in the market, because what if there's multiple offers? What if it's a competitive situation and you don't know? So you prepped your finances, you got your home ready. You also learned about the areas and what you wanted. So you moved probably about like 20, 30 minutes away from where you were. How did you get comfortable with that? What did you do? I mean, I know what I would recommend, but I want to hear what you actually did. Like, this is so much more interesting.
So I knew I worked there, so I knew that there was restaurants in like a little town there. So what we did is start spending some time there. We spent some weekend time there so we could see what the activity was like on a weekend. Mm-hmm. We really like sports, so we went into the town and tried different things for the sports to see what the crowd was like, because it wasn't that ideal where we lived.
I know. I'm aware. I don't live too far from where you used to live, so I get it.
And so we just tried different things within that town to see how we'd feel and fit into that town and if it was the right fit for us.
So this is the same advice we give consumers. I love that you took your own advice having a real estate background, right? Like, go check out the place on the nights and weekends, right? Because that's when people are around. You can go there at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday. Maybe you see some kids getting out of school, but that's not really going to show you what, what's going on. Did you drive by a lot of homes? Like, did you also look at some stuff you know you maybe wouldn't like but wanted to see it anyway? Like, what did that search process look like?
For me, for the search process was we were only interested in a townhouse. Mm-hmm. So it limited our options significantly because we wanted to be in walkable distance. Sure. I knew of a really great neighborhood, but it wasn't in walkable distance. So it really limited us. And the one I really wanted was the one we were in, but by no means did I think one was actually going to be available. Mm-hmm. And it just was kind of a luck of the draw. We went and saw it and we bought it.
So that's what normally
happens.
Well,
we offered
though,
on it, but like, and it wasn't a quick offer. It was a lot of negotiation because we weren't even on the market yet because our realtor made us go look at houses and we're like, no, because worst case, we'll just find somewhere temporarily. And he's like, absolutely not. You're going to have to go look and you're going to have to do this part that you don't want to do.
Smart.
As if, you know, it doesn't work, you're still going to have to know the area because maybe you do have to concede after a while depending on how your commute is from what you decide
100%.
To do.
So you figured out what you wanted. You prepped your home. You got all your finances in order. I'm imagining you had a good understanding about the process.
Yeah.
Did your other half have a good understanding?
This time, but the first time he leveraged my team heavily.
Okay, good. All right. This makes sense.
Yeah. So I had him, he went in, he had a lot of questions. He met with my team prior to the closing.
Smart.
Asked all his questions during the preliminary Ulta to get all of the things he wasn't clear on offered. Because not only has he never bought a house in the U.S., he had only lived in the U.S. for 10 years because he's from England. So it was a completely different home buying process for him than he's ever experienced.
Overseas, it's very different. So even, and I love this because I also have a spouse, right? And this person, and my wife's not in real estate. So like for her, there was a lot of trust, but I did explain to her what was going on. I'm like, all right, here's how we got to do this because, you know, the people just don't get it. So you got an understanding of the process. And the fifth thing is, what did you know about the market? What did you understand about the market when you decided to move? Because it sounds like you decided to move in spite of maybe it not being the ideal conditions to buy, probably good on the sell side. Like, did you get an understanding of that before you actually made a decision?
Yeah, so the amount of time I spend in offices listening to our different meetings with our agents all over the place, I have a lot of time I get to listen and hear their feedback. And you're hearing the over-asking on the seller side, and you're hearing how much the buyers are struggling to meet these. And I said to my husband, selfishly, I want to do this because we're the sellers in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I understand we're on the buyer side, but we're downsizing. This is a win for us.
Yeah.
This could be money we'll never be able to see again on the house we had. So we decided to give up our low interest rate for the opportunity to make more on our house long term.
Well, and so listen to what all this work she did and Michelle did, and you're in the industry. You understood the process. You got your financials in order. You started prepping your home. You learned what you wanted, both you and your husband, and you got an understanding of the direction of the market. And this is really why, and what it demonstrates is the importance of meeting with an agent before you want to go make a decision. Because so many people, they rush into these things or they don't know what's going to happen. And then it's like, what do you mean I got to compete with other homes?
Right.
Or what do you mean the rates are this? And most agents make the mistake of showing homes first and educating later instead of flipping it around. And if you're one of these people that's hearing all this stuff about the 2025 direction of the market, what's going on with housing, rates are coming down, you got to understand those five things first, or at least four of them. Maybe you don't have a home to sell, right? But you want to get all this in place. Did that make it less stressful for you doing all that prep work beforehand?
Absolutely. And that was the first time we ever sold a house. Mm-hmm. So I've never been on that side before.
Stressful.
It is stressful. And I will tell you, despite being in the industry, I still relied heavily on my agent. We asked him a lot of questions throughout the process, as in never selling, because when I was on the real estate side, I was a showing agent, and then I was in the office of a real estate office. So while having my license, I was never that deep. I've never sold a house. So while I knew a lot about it, I never actually did it. And I had a lot of questions along the way and relied heavily on that despite being that prepared. So
for all the consumers listening that you think you know about what's going on in the market, I'm not saying you don't, but the markets can change, right? The average consumer moves every 12 years. Think about what you were doing 12 years ago. Think about what your life looked like 12 years ago. I didn't have any kids 12 years ago. So that's like a very different lifestyle. So that means the market's changed. Technology's changed a lot. You know, 12 years ago, people just started using electronic signatures. Can you imagine not using that now? So the point is, this is coming from someone in the industry. She did a ton of prep work, really happy with where you moved. We were talking about that before the show. If you're in that boat and you want to make a move in 2025, get prepped on those five areas and you'll make a winning decision. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, talk about the big Compass Christie's merger and the NAR settlement getting approved. Next on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.
For the best local mortgage service and great rates on your money, look no further than Mortgage America. We've been operating in the greater Philadelphia area for 40 years with a focus on smooth, easy access to home purchasing. Whether you're a first-time buyer, upsizing or downsizing, or just refinancing, we have programs for you. We also have closing cost assistance programs and access to subsidized interest rates. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. To learn more, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com. Or give us a call at 610-439-8000. We always have a person available to take your call with around-the-clock human service. Purchase your home with the personalized local service you find at Mortgage America.
Mortgage America is an equal housing lender. NMLS 128501.
I'm Tom Tool of the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline. If you're thinking of becoming a real estate agent in the greater Philly area, I have a special offer for you. Our team did $165 million of volume in 2021, making us the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania and a top 1% team nationally. Our agents love us because we offer them a successful career, a great life, and an unbeatable culture. Agents who've been with us for at least a year average 30-plus sales. Even our brand-new agents average 17 to 24 sales a year. We offer proven systems and expert training. We help you set more appointments and sell more houses. Now here's the offer. If you don't have a real estate license yet, we offer real estate scholarships so you can get one for free. Check it out at realestatescholarshipprogram.com or visit the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline at tomtool.com. That's tomtoolwithane.com. Get more out of your real estate career and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool.
Have you considered a career in real estate? Do you want control over your income? Whether you have a license or not, call us today at 610-692-6976 or visit tomtool.com. Join our team, the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline.
Welcome back to Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Michelle Ellis pitching in for Sarah Timon. She's the Senior Operations Manager at Title Alliance. And we are going to be talking about the NAR settlement approval. I'm interested to get your take on this for what we just talked about here in a second. And also this Compass Christie's merger, which I'm also interested in hearing your take on this, being in the industry and working with a lot of brokerages. If you get some value out of this, you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications. And if you want to schedule a call with our team about how to navigate all of these challenges in real estate right now, you can do that with the link in the comments. So the NAR settlement, you mentioned it here.
Yeah.
And you just transacted, so I think you got an interesting perspective here. So it just got approved last week. Last Tuesday, it got final approval from the judge. And we know the DOJ came out and they had this statement of interest where they basically came out and said this does not cover you from future antitrust allegations. And, you know, really, it didn't say this, but this is what it meant is, hey, NAR, we're coming for you and we don't like the way you do things and you're a target. That was how I interpreted it. What do you think about all this?
I was shocked at a lot of it because this is supposed to protect the consumer, I found that it's really made it more confusing.
Yes.
I can say it as a recent consumer. Now, in hindsight, yes. Was the seller before paying both sides? Sure. Mm-hmm. But if this was supposed to help make it more clear and more transactional, it's very unclear. And even when we deal with it now on the title side, we're chasing down commissions, and then it's to find out who's even paying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, while the consumer now has an opportunity to or feels more empowered to negotiate, I think that part of it when what I've been hearing is they go, well, I'm not paying anything. Well, where in life do you get anything for free? You know,
it's a fair question.
I think that really brings back like the question of, I just said how much I leaned on it even being in the industry of my realtor throughout a transaction. So my concern is, if you, now you're going to have people going about this themselves, what is that going to do and the impact to the industry and the impact to their experience and the long-term impact to things like title
mm-hmm.
or other areas of the housing market when people are taking things upon themselves?
Well, you bring up a lot of great points there, and I want to unpack a few of them because you obviously title gets involved like at the settlement, putting together the final figures. We also need typically mortgage bank approval on the settlement sheets, and mm-hmm. the biggest gap I see right now is people don't know how to explain these things. I know with our team, we've been working on this for over a year on how to explain it and what the language is and making sure it's very clear to everybody. I like the idea of even making people sign a contract before you go look at a home. If you sign a non-exclusive, it doesn't really mean anything. You can just cancel it. You're gone. You're moving on to the next one. The DOJ did not like that. They thought that actually limited the ability to interview agents, which I kind of agree with. I like the conversation up front because before it'd be, hey, Michelle, let's go look at this house.
Yeah.
And there's no discussion of who's getting paid what or anything else, who's entitled to a fee. That's now entered the conversation. So I see that as a win for the consumer. It's a good conversation.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge is that agents need to work even more closely with title and mortgage because let's say the buyer's paying a portion of the compensation.
Right.
Well, it's got to get approved on the sheet. The mortgage company's got to be okay with it. It's got to be on the closing cost estimate because the laws require that, at least in Pennsylvania, you have one of those signed. And the title company needs to know.
Right.
How often is the title company not getting notified? I bet you it's more than you think because
it's
agents don't communicate.
Think. Right. And not even that. It's the part where the buyer's paying because if we find out too late, the mortgage company's not always approving it because mm-hmm. depending on the amount, it may be too high and interfere with their debt to ratio mm-hmm. income and therefore put them out of that loan price. So all of these things matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just almost like you need like a graph or a chart with them really early in the conversation about here's how much you can spend on your mortgage. You're probably going to have to pay some part of a commission.
Mm-hmm.
They almost need a line for that now. It's like every industry, what happened was your forms changed.
Mm-hmm.
Our forms didn't change.
Yep. That's the
mortgage
well
forms
said.
Didn't change. So we're backpedaling into how to retrieve your information.
Yeah.
And so is mortgage.
And I think, we talked about this with a couple of lenders that we work with. And obviously we work with Michelle's company, Title Alliance, very closely. And it's, hey, are you informing all the parties about what needs to be on there? And if you're not doing that and it's too late and it's like a day before settlement, you can't just change that because the mortgage company is going to approve the settlement sheet. Now, if it's a cash deal, you're fine. That's what, like 5% of the time, maybe.
Yeah.
So that's a big challenge here that no one's even talking about. The other thing that came out of this approval, I'm curious what you think about this. So the payouts for the claimants of the $418 million that NAR is going to contribute to the $700 million in settlements, you know how much the average claimant is going to get out of this?
I think I saw like
$900, right? So, unfortunately, this is another situation where attorneys have made the killing here. Congratulations, guys. I mean, and gals, that's great for you. But there's a lot of objections to this, and I think what's going to happen here, there's two things. One, right now we're in a point of time where we've got a new administration coming in. So anything this DOJ says, I don't think means anything because there's a new administration coming in January 20th.
Right.
This is the same DOJ that already reversed a decision when they had a settlement in place with NAR in 2019. So I don't think you can pay attention to this objection. This is like the midnight pardon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, we're going to say one more thing before we leave. So I don't know what your observation is there. I don't really care too much because I don't think anything's going to happen from this DOJ because we're in a lame duck session right now.
I agree. And we have similar things because we're joint ventures.
Mm-hmm.
We work with the DOJ investigates us and make sure that we're in compliance. So there's been some big talk about anything joint venture related, and depending on the state. In Washington, D.C., they're fully illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Nope.
Just Washington, D.C., nowhere else?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and so they've been really diving into certain states about mm-hmm. it. And so Pennsylvania was one that was being pushed on really hard. We've been, you know, made aware. And so we always are obviously really on top of it. But there are some people that, you know, have some gray lines, and we have been like documenting everything. And, you know, that's why we've been open so long.
Good.
For those reasons. Right. And it's like, with the new things changing, everybody's like, well, now what? And we're like, well, we're not changing anything. Like certain mm-hmm. like certain rules are certain rules. But it goes back to, for your side, when they're changing documents, that's not like a law or a rule. That's just like NAR. That's NAR.
It's
like
an NAR rule.
Yeah,
that's
so
exactly
it's an NAR
what this
rule,
is.
Which can change again. Because wasn't there already conversation about your paperwork changing again?
It changes all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think the issue is that the compensation being disclosed, no matter what it is, now that there's more than ever, because this has always been an option, by the way.
Right.
There's been times when buyers have paid the compensation. Like, that's happened before. Now it's more out there. It's more prevalent. It's got to be disclosed. Like, that's all it is. And usually when there's problems at settlements, it's because the agents don't tell anybody what's going on. And I mean, that's just what we've observed. So that's where it's important having a good team around you, where you got a transaction coordinator communicating with title. That's what our office does. They make right. sure all this stuff gets communicated. The only time there's an issue is when there's some secret addendum that an agent put together. So so I tend to agree with a lot of what you're saying. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens once we get into post-January 20th right now.
For sure.
The other piece of industry news. So you work with a lot of brokerages, not just ours, right?
Yes.
Teams, all that sort of stuff. So yesterday, Compass announced they acquired Christie's International Real Estate and At Property. So it was, it's a merger valued at $444 million. It combines $150 million in cash and 44.13 million shares of Compass Class A common stock, according to the 8K filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. This is interesting because it brings like 100 independently owned affiliates across 50 countries into Compass.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robert Refkin came out and said the partnership's going to allow us to empower strong independent brokerages and broker owner entrepreneurs around the world. Blah, blah, blah. Our companies share the same passion. They do have, you know, Christie's is a legitimate brand.
For sure.
What do you think about this? Because there haven't been any mergers in a while. I think everyone was kind of on hold with this NAR stuff.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we're going to see more coming up. I would imagine there's some very vulnerable companies right now. Not a lot of brokerages are that profitable. This is the reality of the business. You deal with a lot of them. So what's your observation?
Well, I
here?
Was just thinking back to some of the meetings that we have quarterly with your team.
Sure.
Just in general, if we look at where they are. Right? We look at, and we have a couple that are really big, and then we have the rest of them all sitting down here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ones we're talking about sitting down here real low, where are they going? They've got to go somewhere, and those agents need to go somewhere. So I think we'll see more. Now, what's the real impact? It'll depend on the productivity of those agents.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is, again, it's going to continue to be that market where you can absorb whomever you want. But the productivity of what those offices and those agents are doing and their output is really going to define whether the merge is successful or not.
Well, and I mergers can be tough. It depends. Like a broker like Compass,
like whose name?
Yeah. Well, I think it's probably going to be Compass. Would be my
yeah.
guess. I mean, I don't know what that's going to look like. You know, I think the thing is with Compass and they're buying these. Like the name's going to change, right? Most are going to stay. Probably some are going to leave. Now, you're talking about these other smaller independent offices. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is tricky because you talked about agent productivity. Most of their agents aren't that productive. I mean,
right.
And they're maybe doing 5-6 sales a year, and they've been in the business like 20 years. I don't know that you can make that person productive. I think there is an opportunity for an agent. You can't motivate people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you've worked at real estate companies. There's some people that come in, they're driven, they know what they want to do, and there's others that they're okay doing that.
And that's all they want to be, and that's fine. But you can merge as many of these mm-hmm. companies as you want together, but they're still only going to be the top 10% or the middle, like 25%, right,
mm-hmm.
that are the top people. And then you have your middle, and then you're going to have your bottom, no matter where you are, that do those one or two deals a year.
And Christie's has a much big – they don't have a big presence locally here.
I mean, no.
But they do have a large it's like a luxury real estate model, and I think that flies in some places.
Yeah.
Our market is not like this like luxury, like people talk about they want to do luxury real estate. You're chasing like 3% of the market,
yeah.
At least here.
Go out to California,
or New York City,
yes. New York, you know, yeah, other areas.
And they talk about their, you know, Northern California operation and some other places. I think there is a market for that for sure. If you're adding agent count, that's great. I think, but when you look at merging with smaller independent offices, I think you're going to see some of these like mid-sized companies get bought. Like, yeah. And I think that could probably happen here because you deal with a lot of like broker owners and people that run these companies. Some of these companies don't make that much money, and it's like, what are they going to do? What's their game plan? What's their exit strategy?
I think that's a question for a lot of realtors right mm-hmm. now overall. I mean, some of our best partners have been in the business for so long. What's their transition plan? You can own your real estate company for how long, but where's it going?
Mm-hmm.
Who's next in line? Who's taking over that legacy for you?
For sure. And I spoke to like Jack Miller at T360. We interviewed him on Knowledge Brokers as well. And he said one of the biggest challenges right now is the aging leadership in real estate. I'm not talking like 50 or 60. We're talking like 75 plus uh-huh. for a lot of these folks. And at some point, they're either going to retire or, you know, something else could happen. I mean, that's the reality. So this is going to be interesting. I think you're going to see more of this, though, because you look at some of these companies out there. I just wonder how they're even getting by sometimes.
And it's
interesting. I mean, Compass has been, you know, they finally got profitable and looked at the might have spent all the money on this merger for all I know. Yeah. I mean, I'm not really sure. So it's pretty interesting to me. I mean, it could be a good move for them. We'll see. It's a way to add agents, that's for sure.
They've been profitable for 2 quarters, right?
But yeah. I mean,
big merge for two quarters.
I always have a tough time with these Wall Street numbers, right?
I know,
like if I was only profitable for 2 quarters at our company, or imagine if they come to you and they're like, all right, Michelle, you're in charge of profitability. And you come like, well, we got 2 quarters out of the, like, it just wouldn't. You probably get fired.
Yeah,
right?
I will tell you, my boss would be like unacceptable performance.
I don't really get it. So, but I mean, that's publicly traded companies are different.
Yeah,
right? They have a lot of money coming in. So, I bet we see more of these. I think it's a good move for Compass if they can move towards profitability, because one way to do that is just sell more houses.
Absolutely.
So, it'll depend what their comp structure looks like. I would bet now that this NAR settlement is over. I don't think the lawsuits are over. There's going to be more of these because I think there are some companies out there that are really struggling. I think it's going to be surprising to a lot of folks.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people saw this coming either.
No, I wouldn't have guessed Christie's for sure. I think they have that legacy name and, mm-hmm. you know, you picture them as luxury, so you wouldn't picture them the need to merge.
Well, and you know, it depends on what market you're in, how much real estate you're selling and what your profits look like.
That's
and,
true.
I was at I wasn't there, but a friend of mine sent this. It was like one of these like Tom Ferry conferences, and they had a slide, and it said, would you rather sell 400 homes with X percent profit or 600 homes with Y percent profit? And the profit margin was bigger on the 400 homes, meaning you make more money. I think that's really why you've got to understand your numbers. You talked about running
Always.
A business at the beginning. If you don't have like a profit and loss statement, even as like an agent on a team, right? Mm-hmm. You're running into some expenses. You've got stuff that's going to come. You got to know how much money you're making every year. So that if you don't do that, you're just not running a business.
Nope. It's just like they say, it's a hobby or it's your next check, right? You have to have a P&L no matter what your business is, no matter. I mean, as soon as you're making a paycheck, you should have a P&L.
I agree. I mean, it's a person. It's called having a budget. Right?
Yeah.
That's all it is. So got it. All right. So. Why don't we take a break? I'm going to come back and talk all about Title Alliance, what your operations manager job entails, because I think that's one of the toughest jobs in any company. It's kind of like the disciplinarian in some cases.
Sometimes.
Well, not easy, right?
Yeah.
I know what Wendy, our operations manager, goes through. So we're going to come back and talk all about Michelle next on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.
You shouldn't have to deal with all the red tape when getting your mortgage from a big or online bank. At Mortgage America, we have access to big bank money, but with the personalized and detailed service of a local bank. We are here in your community and ready to serve with fast settlements, low down payment options, and first-time homebuyer programs. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. For more information, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com or give us a call at 610-439-8000.
Mortgage America is equal. NMLS 128501.
The Tom Tool Sales Group is the number one REMAX team in Pennsylvania with over $165 million in volume for 2021. I'm Tom Tool, and our team has achieved that kind of success by being a great place to work with and to work for. No one knows Greater Philly better than we do. We know real estate, but more importantly, we're real people. We hire the best agents and we give them all the tools to succeed. Even our brand new agents sell 17 to 24 homes a year because our team delivers the best experience in real estate. Teams deliver a better experience than individuals, and we're a top 1% real estate team in the country. We call it AAA service. We're your advocate, ally, and advisor. Because this isn't a transaction to us. It's a relationship. If you're buying or selling a home, call the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX main line at 610-692-6976 or visit TomTool.com. That's TomTool.com. Sell your home for more and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool.
When you're getting a mortgage, you shouldn't have to sacrifice great service just to get a great rate. At Mortgage America, we've been lending with this philosophy for over 35 years. We have access to great low rates without the complications and delays of big or online banks. We're a local Pennsylvania lender with loan officers that you can actually meet. As PHFA's number one lender, we specialize in all residential mortgage programs, including first-time buyer programs and low-down payment options. For your free pre-approval, call us at 610-439-8000 or apply online at mymortgageamerica.com.
Mortgage America's equal housing lender, NMLS 2-8-5-0-1.
All right, all right. Welcome back to Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. I'm here with Michelle Ellis, the Senior Operations Manager at Title Alliance. And we are going to talk about everything she does at Title Alliance. It's a huge company. We've been partnered with them for decades. And there's a lot of things people overlook when it comes to title. And I also feel like title gets beat up a lot in the transaction, which to me is nonsense because it's usually someone else didn't do their job and then you put it on paper and they yell at the title company. So if you get some value out of this, you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe to the channel, hit the bell for notifications. And if you want to schedule a call with our team about how we can help you have a great experience with title and Title Alliance specifically, you can do that with the link in the comments. So I guess my first question for you, what is a senior operations manager? What's like your job description like? Because operations is a tough part of the business. It's also very necessary because if you don't have a good operator, you likely don't have a strong business.
Well, for me, I mean, mine's kind of like a little bit all over the place because with our joint ventures, we're all named something different. So for you, we're TA of the main line. So we can start with that one. So all the different joint ventures have their own real estate office they're paired with, and then we have employees designated for that office. So for each office, we have our own employees. We build in the processes that make sense for your office and the way your teams run. And then, you know, we set up inside your offices. So we do everything from start to finish. So we build in, everybody's in-house. We actually work out of your offices when possible. Worst case, we work like across the street, like across the hall in an office building as close as possible. So I work with HR to get the employees. I work with our top managers in the area who have expertise for years because this wasn't, like, title wasn't my background. So I rely heavily on my awesome managers, but I wouldn't be here without them for sure. And then
teamwork.
Yeah, absolutely. And then we set up the offices and then we set up all the equipment. And then on top of that, it's really about working with them or stepping in for them and being at those quarterly meetings, running a meeting or training to help the agents be better educated on title, stepping in to here. It's really about being where they need and what they need for whatever that office is. And those needs are very varied depending on what that is. Like Thursday, I'm helping an agent with his class at Temple with kids coming into real estate from high school and college.
Nice.
So, you know, it's a lot of random responsibilities along with really, employees are number one for me, and I have a partner that I work with a lot, and his is more on our agent relationships, and then I'm like backup relationships, obviously, as well.
Sure.
And then our main investor owner, which is your father in that relationship with here. So they're all very different, and at the end of the day, it's all going to the same place, is to be successful to you guys, but really the clients. So first line of defense, you guys, but second line of defense is really that client experience and getting them to the table. And just for the record, my teams are going to love you. I'm just going to keep playing that. You're right. They're always blamed for everything, but we're the last stop. And anything that gets blown up, blows up at the table, that's ours. So,
Well, and I've seen things happen, and we've had to actually have some conversations with our agents because like they don't get the numbers on time. Oh, title didn't send the numbers. I'm like, no. The mortgage company did not send the numbers, and title is responsible for putting them together and making the sheet work. But that's an education point. And
for
I think
sure.
It's they just look at the person who's delivering it. You know, title gets beat up a lot. And, you know, you mentioned something earlier about like DC and these joint ventures and these sort of things. You know, imagine if you didn't have title, what it would be like trying to close these things. We're a title company state. Like, you're in Jersey or New York where attorneys handle everything. I think it'd be a lot slower for a lot of folks. But the title companies, they have a hard time. Like, we really value our relationships with Kelly and Alyssa and all the great closers we have down at our office. So I think it's important to maybe give these people a little slack sometimes.
Yeah, they would really appreciate that. And I agree. Because sometimes it seems like they think we're on the opposite side of them, when the reality is we have the same goal as them. But our goal is to do it legally and in compliance with our underwriters. So the relationship we have that makes us different is we have really great relationships with our underwriters. So when they tell us they need something, it's to make sure that when they get that policy is not full of exceptions because they did not provide what we needed. So you can go to anybody and they'll say, oh, you can do that, or you can do this, or we'll do that. That company takes on the risk, but if it doesn't go through, or that money never comes back, or that something falls through, you gave your client that policy, it's going to have that exception on it, even though they told you they'll take care of it. They can't override an underwriter, so they can promise you whatever they want. But at the end of the day, the underwriter is going to say, we told you no, and if it doesn't clear, or the escrow hold doesn't, you know, if the company decides to hold the escrow for them or whatever, and like we say, you know, we have to, and they say you don't have to, the company's going to pay that out as a loss to themselves to put your client right, or your client's not going to have that coverage. So, I mean, some of these people saying yes, they're doing it at a risk to your client's policy. So we like to stay in the lines that our underwriters give you to make sure your clients have what they paid for. And I think that's a really big difference versus others. And what we do is our relationship's so great. We've had the underwriter on the phone with our clients and the agent explaining tough situations and giving them the clarity that we just couldn't seem to get through to them. And not because we didn't do our best, but, you know, maybe they just needed to ask it another way or hear it from somebody else. And they're that willing when the time comes, if necessary. But our teams are educated and they're licensed and they're ready to go. But we have that extra backup.
I love what you said there about the availability of the underwriters. It is virtually impossible to talk to an underwriter in mortgage. Like, you can never talk to those people.
Exactly.
Most title guys, I mean, I love the ability to walk into, you know, Kelly or Alyssa's office and say, hey, like, we're having some trouble here. Can you walk me through this? And that goes a long way when people are all stressed out, they're moving, it's towards the end of the transaction. A lot of the stress has nothing to do with title. It's just that they want to get this over with.
It's the whole procedure.
100%.
Absolutely.
So what you really explained there to me was like the difference between a good and a bad title company. What are some of the myths about title insurance that you feel like people run into? Because I think that this is something, again, that it doesn't get explained properly.
Yeah. So one of the ones that I always like to hear is title insurance is expensive. Well, it's expensive. It's only a one-time premium, and it's based on the price of your home. And that's a small percentage of your closing costs. And when you do the enhanced, it's as long as you own the house or your heir owns the property. So it's one time. It doesn't renew annually. There's no other payments. It's one time. And it protects everything for the lifetime of your home. So to me, is it expensive?
I mean, it's going to be there a long time. What people don't realize is I've had homes I've sold that I end up, I had them under contract. They didn't settle because they didn't get title insurance. One example comes to mind where it was an arm's length transaction. We don't need title. The family bought it from somebody else. Well, when we went to settlement, there was something in the policy that showed the church next door owned the portion of the driveway and they had no access to the house. You can't sell a home like that.
Nope.
The sale fell apart. The first title company missed it. Second title company was a title alliance company. They picked it up. And you know, I mean, I had the listing, didn't sell, whatever. It is what it is. But if they didn't have a good title company,
it gets missed.
Then they can't sell their house again later. I mean, it's just a problem.
Right. Over $615 million have been spent defending property rights of homeowners.
That's a lot of money.
That's why you need it.
Yeah.
Because things come up and people make handshake deals that don't go on record and then at some point get filed. And if it gets filed after you buy the house and you don't have the extended policy, it counts. And you're not covered and you have to go fight that battle on your own with the attorneys.
So talk about the enhanced title policies. We got a few minutes here. And I know this is something that This is one of those things, like, I'd recommend it to everybody. I think everyone should get the enhanced title because it's just going to protect you. What's the difference between a basic and an enhanced policy?
So the main difference is the level of coverage.
Okay.
The standard only covers you up till the day you close and the deed is filed. So anything that gets filed up to that day that you close. So if somebody does that, that happens. But on the enhanced, like we just said, it's until the lifetime of your home that you either own or your heirs own. So there's no, like, anything pops up, it's part of the policy. And it also has additional coverage, like boundary disputes, like the driveway, and different things like that. And just, like, people trying to have, like, a false deed. There's a lot of fraud we're seeing now.
All the time. You get these things in the mail all the time.
And, you know, Steven Spielberg. Somebody tried to put claim to his property, and because he had title insurance, they didn't get anywhere with it.
Mm-hmm. So, good stuff, Michelle.
Like,
so get title insurance is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
So you can connect with Michelle. She said to follow her on Facebook. So it's Michelle Ellis, just like it would sound, on Facebook. She's the senior operations manager at Title Alliance. We use Title Alliance all the time. Very grateful for the relationship. You want to follow me, you can get me on Instagram at TomTool3RD. That's it for this week's episode of Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.